and welcome back to Art Pod. This is the show where we talk about the Michigan artists and thinkers that we are following right now. And we try each week to pull out a theme for each show. This week, that theme is women and change. Women who heal, who struggle, who go on new adventures. And each one of these women is about as different from the other as you can possibly get. There are photographers, there are grieving moms, there are Shakespearean actresses who also happen to be in prison. And there's one woman who ditched her day job for a 1,000-mile hike around the Great Lakes. First up, though, we are going to start with that photographer. This is a story about baby pictures in a way, but it's not exactly the kind that, you know, take over your Facebook feed and fill up your email. It's actually about what role pictures play when a baby's life is cut short, because it's at that point that the photographs obviously are going to take on a whole new significance. And this is the story of two moms and how these final family portraits are helping them heal after the loss of a child. This is heavy stuff, I know, but I promise you that Sarah Joy, this first mom, she has more happy moments than sad ones these days. You meet her and she's this beaming, blue-eyed, no-nonsense super mama. She's got these two-year-old twins and she has this awesome laugh.
There will be no accident.
But a few years ago, she was in what probably felt like the saddest place on earth. She was watching her newborn son, Joel, be hooked up to life support machines at Beaumont Children's Hospital.
I had a blissfully healthy pregnancy and delivered a full-term baby who was mortally injured during his birth.
See, what happened is that during labor, Joel's heartbeat had seemed fine. It was slowing down a little bit during contractions, but then it would pick right back up. But he was born not breathing, and the doctor said that it was hypoxia. He simply had not gotten enough oxygen to his brain. The doctors told Joy and her husband that once they removed the life support machine, Joel would probably only have a couple minutes. In fact, though, he lived for 45, all on his own, no machines.
That's how tough he was. And I'm like, he died because he was tough. He had asked for help, kid. Like, you know, like if his heart hadn't been so tough, if it would have decelerated during his birth, they would have done a C-section, got him out of there, we'd be gone. He'd have been fine. But his little ticker kept going, even when he was in trouble, just like it did when he died.
Baby Joel didn't live long. He was only here for 5 days. Towards the end of those 5 days, the nurses came into Joy's hospital room and they asked her the last question she's expecting. Do you want this photographer to come in and take photos of you and your baby?
I was watching him die, and here's this stranger walking in. I don't care about you and your camera. I said, I don't know that I'm ever going to want to look at these pictures. I may find them repulsive and disgusting, but if I want them, this is my only chance.
And this is how Sarah Joy met Monty Must, a professional photographer from Sylvan Lake. Must is famous in that hospital for taking these intimate, warm, loving shots that capture every single inch of these babies.
Their hands and their feet and their ears and their tushies, you know, that you can actually feel and touch that baby with your eyes.
There is a reason that Must is so good at seeing through the eyes of these parents. Her daughter, Maya, took her own life at age 28. This was about 6 months before she took photos of baby Joel. And Must says it is because of Maya, her daughter, that she takes these kinds of photos for other parents. Because like them, she's trying to hold on to the memory of her daughter.
The way that she sounded and the way that she smelled and the way that she looked. And that's what they gave to me. The byproduct is I did heal. I can laugh about her, and I can smile now.
Joy is healing slowly, too, and what helps, she says, is making baby Joel a part of everyday family life. The pictures that Must took, she says, they are everywhere in their house.
Because my kids come running up to you. Van and Maggie will come running up to you and tell you everything they did today, and Joel doesn't get to do that. So it's my job as his mom to make him a part of things.
Sarah could not save him. But she can save his memory.
Right now, her twins, Maggie and Van, are only 2 years old. They don't really understand that they had a brother and that he died. But Joy says when they are ready, she's going to take those pictures of Joel and show them to Maggie and Van. And that's how they'll meet their brother. I'm Kate Wells, Michigan Radio News. Okay, next, we are going to talk to some women who are in a very different situation. They are in prison here in Michigan, and they're also performing Shakespeare's The Tempest, which Michigan Radio's Kyle Norris decided she wanted to go and check out.
There's about a dozen actors and their director standing on a stage in a circle. They're doing stretches and vocal warm-ups and tongue twisters.
You know, you need unique New York.
You know, you need unique New York.
Rubber baby buggy bumpers.
These actors are all inmates, and they're inside the Women's Huron Valley Correctional Facility. It's about 10 miles south of Ann Arbor. As part of the Shakespeare in Prison program, they're practicing for The Tempest. Later this summer, they're going to perform the play for inmates and staff in the prison's small auditorium.
And I, thy Caliban, for I, thy foot licker,
give me thy hand. I do begin to have bloody thoughts.
Franny Shepherd Bates runs the program. She's instructing three actors on stage. And in this scene, they stumble upon some glittery, possibly enchanted clothing.
Think about what you would do physically, right?
So she's talking with an actor named Janetta, and prison policy will only let me identify inmates by their first name. Janetta had been standing really far away from the other actors, but Shepherd Bates tells her to get up close, right in the other actors' faces.
Next time, do that, right?
Yeah.
And if I was up on them, I'd be knocking the clothes back out of their hands.
Maybe.
A little bit, only because I got one agenda.
Exactly.
Janetta says as a kid, she'd heard about Romeo and Juliet and Hamlet, but she'd never read Shakespeare.
Growing up, I wasn't exposed to many opportunities. I did a lot of running the streets and dealing with the wrong people. And when you come here and you say, well, this is not the result I want in life.
So she's taking this class, along with other classes the prison offers, to figure out what she might be able to pursue when she gets out. One student who's changed big time is Elfrida. She's known for having some strong opinions that she expresses about the play.
In the way that sometimes it makes other people feel as though what they're saying is unimportant, which is not my intent.
Basically, Elfrida would cut off other people or say things that seem confrontational during rehearsal, and that made the others feel uncomfortable. So Shepherd Bates spoke with Elfrida privately and with the group. And Elfrida heard what they had to say.
When I sit back sometimes and I, you know, receive, like, the feedback from the other ladies once we run into a situation like that and they feel as though I'm making what they're saying feel less important, it kind of, like, make me meditate and readjust how I express myself.
And she has changed the way that she expresses herself.
Shepherd Bates says this new skill has made things run more smoothly, and it's helping Elfrida be a better communicator. And Shepherd Bates says Shakespeare made this change possible because she says performing Shakespeare is a team sport and you've got to work together. The actors say they're also learning from the characters in The Tempest. Lisa plays the lead, Prospero. She says Shakespeare's characters are flawed yet good.
My particular character starts off very angry and very vengeful. And then by the end of the play, he realizes that he needs to give up the anger and the thoughts of revenge and move towards love. And I think his transformation is somewhat parallel to what a lot of us go through. We have to give up anger. We have to forgive ourselves. We have to forgive other people. We have to, you know, just really learn and focus on try to move on. And that's not easy in a place like this.
Another inmate put it this way. Shakespeare takes these flawed characters and makes poetry from their stories. She says she's made mistakes, but she's starting to see that she can make something beautiful out of her life. I'm Kyle Norris, Michigan Radio News.
Now, continuing with our change theme, we are going to hear from a woman who made a pretty big leap. She got up from her desk, she put on her hiking boots, and she walked over 1,000 miles. She hiked the shorelines of all 5 Great Lakes. And then she wrote a book about it. And she came in to talk about all of these adventures with stateside Cynthia Canty.
As we move into our middle years, many of us yearn to do something to change things up in a big way. But what? Well, Battle Creek's Laureen Neuenheis took that question and challenge and really came up with something different. She got up from her desk, she put on her hiking boots, and she started walking and walking and walking. First, Laureen walked 1,019 miles around Lake Michigan. Then she decided to hit the shorelines of all 5 Great Lakes. That was the big challenge for last year. Her adventures are chronicled in her new book, A 1,000-Mile Great Lakes Walk, One Woman's Trek Along the Shorelines of All Five Great Lakes, published by Crick Hollow Books. And Laureen Neuenheis has taken off her hiking boots. She is wearing much more fashionable boots, and she joins us in the studio. Welcome, Laureen.
Thank you.
Well, the obvious question, as I read your book, you were hiking in pouring rain. You were hiking in winds, blazing sunshine. You walked lakesides, you walked your way through cities, you walked around nuclear power plants, you dealt with hordes of deer flies, and you just kept walking. Why so?
I wanted to get to know my favorite place step by step and record it in my muscles and my bones, and my favorite place is Lake Michigan. And that adventure was so much fun, I thought, that can't be the only one. So that's why I did another 1,000-mile hike last year.
Wow. And I'd like you, if you would, to share a passage that you wrote about what it was like when you were out in the woods and you were worrying a little about some furry critters.
Oh, yeah.
I've highlighted that. I'd love to hear your own voice and share that with us.
Sure. The sun was beginning to go down and the woods got thicker as I hiked. It started to look like really good bear country. I heard coyote yipping in the woods and a murder of ravens squawking like they owned the place. I started singing out loud to alert any large carnivores lurking about to my presence. One was my impression of Ethel Merman singing, "There's no business like show business." I even added some jazz hands along the way. I was pretty sure no self-respecting bear would be able to eat me after that. Another song I often sang was a two-part opera I made up. In the lowest voice I could manage, I'd sing, "Don't eat me, I don't taste good. You think that I would, but I don't." That would be followed by my highest voice singing, "Actually, I'm delicious, but I won't tell that to you." I'd switch back and forth between the parts, arguing with myself in two voices. Somehow I figured this would not only entertain and alert the top of the food chain, but would also make them think that there was possibly more than one of me. I'm not sure how convinced they were, but hey, I emerged without getting any invitations to be dinner.
And here you are sitting with us now. Just delightful. Laureen, did you view your walk? So, you know, over the course of the 70 or so days, you did over 1,000 miles. So you were on each of the shores of our five Great Lakes. What do you feel this was an act of environmental activism, or what did you see this as?
Activism and education. I think the more people understand the lakes, the more they understand that this water is moving to the sea, but it's doing it very slowly, that water in Lake Superior can be there for hundreds of years before it enters Lake Huron. We can get past the old adage that dilution is the solution to pollution, because it's not. If this water is going to be here for hundreds of years, we don't want to be tossing pollution and industrial waste into the lakes. So definitely an act of education to understand these lakes and to understand how they differ from each other and how they work together as a system.
One gets a sense reading your book and also going on to your blog, where you have lots of videos and photographs. Each lake has a real personality, doesn't it?
Distinct. They do.
Yeah.
So give
us an idea of what you found from more intimate experience than most of us would have of the varying personalities of our Great Lakes.
Well, Lake Erie is the youngest of the group geologically, and it's kind of a teenager. It will throw a tantrum every once in a while. When a storm blows across, Lake Erie can throw the biggest fit, and you don't expect that because it's the smallest Great Lake and the shallowest, but it can be quite dangerous. Lake Huron has these beautiful, vast limestone deposits. The largest open-pit limestone mine in the world is up near Rogers City.
I think most of us didn't know that. I didn't.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah.
And I got a tour of the mine. I love mine tours.
Yeah.
So Lake Huron has this undergirding of the limestone. And that's one of the reasons that the zebra mussels and the quagga mussels have done so well there, because there's all this dissolved calcium in the water.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Lake Michigan is my old friend. We have the Sunset Coast in Michigan and just the beautiful sandy beaches. Yeah. And I expected all of Lake Michigan to be sandy beaches, and it's not.
You discovered it wasn't.
No, and exploring the geology and having that picture come into focus for me was a fascinating part of this adventure.
Mm-hmm.
Lake Superior is the wildest, the coldest, the deepest, just geologically very significant. There are things up there that there are whole books written about the geology of the Keweenaw alone.
Yeah.
So I just loved exploring the wild side up there.
and you actually had a chance to do some of this with your son.
I
so
did.
That special mom-son thing must have been very, made that a real special part. You were up in the Keweenaw with him?
Yes, and Pictured Rocks. We hiked the entire length of Pictured Rocks together. Yeah.
We're speaking with author Laureen Neuenheis. Her book is all about her 1,000-mile hike over the shorelines of all five of our Great Lakes. And Laureen, over the time you were walking, what did you learn about Michigan and about its people?
I think Michiganders understand that we have a much larger stake in the health of these lakes than any other state. Mm-hmm. There are 8 states and the province of Ontario that touch the Great Lakes. Michigan touches 4 of the 5 Great Lakes, and we are peninsular people. Our state has these watery edges. So I think the connection to these waters is greater with the people of Michigan. When I hiked through Wisconsin on my first hike, I was surprised that Wisconsinites, I believe they're called, mm-hmm. they go inland for recreation because the lakeshore is not as accessible. There are clay cliffs along the way. There are very few stretches where it's a sandy beach. So geology influences how people interact with their lakes.
And so we in Michigan have just the opportunity to be able to interact in every way possible.
Definitely.
I guess I kind of wondered your thoughts as someone, as you walked and you had a chance to think and look, what do you feel now based on this are the main threats that the Great Lakes face? What worries you for the Great Lakes?
The biggest threat and the thing I find just historically in the last couple decades, the thing that can throw these ecosystems completely out of whack mm-hmm. are invasive species. And I find it hard to believe we don't have strict ballast water control measures or just say ocean-going vessels, stay in the ocean, transfer your cargo to the lake freighters. Mm. I don't know why there isn't a very simple – there is a very simple and elegant solution to this.
That would take care of that, yes.
It would.
And we've heard that so often from the water experts when we talk with them on stateside, that ballast issue.
And restoration of wetlands is another huge thing that will improve the health of the lakes. And the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, which was a 5-year funding mm-hmm. program, has done measurable things to improve the health of our lakes. So I'm very encouraged by that.
Back to one woman walking that 1,000 miles, starting out around Port Clinton, all of this, ending at Niagara Falls. I know very well where you were. You're on that Ontario side. So you had a chance to taste Ontario and you were in Toronto.
Yeah.
But I guess I have to just give it up to you for the sheer determination and your good cheer. As I went on your blog, which, by the way, is laketrek.blogspot.com, I love the video. It really touched me that you shot of yourself as you were struggling along a highway in the thumb. You were battling high winds. And you had a couple more miles to go.
Yeah.
And you said, I like to sing to myself. And what song did you sing to get yourself that last 2 miles?
What Doesn't Kill You Makes You Stronger.
Good old Kelly Clarkson was there with you.
She was there kicking my butt. Yeah.
So how has this, for you personally, how has this, these two huge hikes that you've done, these two big adventures, how has it made you stronger?
Oh, it's completely redefined the limits that I thought I had in my life. All those walls that were kind of closing in are completely pushed back. I was pretty empowered before this, but now I almost feel like I can take flight at times, which is lovely. I feel like I can take on any project.
So what's next? I know you've got two big journeys. What do you want to do next?
I'm doing another 1,000-mile adventure. This time it will be kayaking and hiking, exploring the islands of the Great Lakes. There are islands in every single Great Lake, and I'm actually starting it this summer, woven in with my book tour. Mm-hmm. And I'll take part in some scientific research on some of the islands. I'm going to work with the rangers keeping track of the piping plovers on South Manitou this summer. So I'm just thrilled about this new adventure and just a different component. And I think this series will be a trilogy. I can see the box set. So,
and then the made-for-TV movie or some kind of thing following that. The book is a 1,000-mile Great Lakes walk, one woman's trek along the shorelines of all 5 Great Lakes, Laureen Neuenheis. And Laureen will actually be appearing tonight at Literati Bookstore at 124 East Washington in Ann Arbor and at 7 p.m. Yeah. But the book is available.
It's actually only available at select independent bookstores right now. Independent bookstores really championed my first book, hand sold it. It was picked up all over, and as a thank you to them, I'm giving them a two-month jump on sales before it goes into full distribution in June.
And again, her website is lakeTrack.blogspot.com. Lots of fun videos and songs, just like she treated us to. Lorraine Nienhuis, it's really a pleasure to meet you. Thank you so much, and you're going to keep us posted on the progress of your whole adventure with the islands.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
All right, that is it for us this week at ArtPod. Make sure you go ahead and go online where you can check out this ArtPod. You can download it, you can share it, you can link to it. And most importantly, you can also give us some feedback. What do you like about ArtPod? What do you want to see different? And make sure that you let us know which artists and thinkers here in Michigan we need to be aware of. This is how we find stories. You guys send us in something that you thought was just great in your own community or something that's not getting enough attention. Go ahead and click on Share Your Story on MichiganRadio.org. And until then, I'm Kate Wells. This is ArtPod from Michigan Radio News.
Support for arts and cultural reporting on Michigan Radio comes in part from a grant from the Michigan Council for Arts and Cultural Affairs and the National Endowment for the Arts.